call Senate Hess to order. It is 2nd of February. We have President Senator Elkin, Green, myself, Dyson, and Senator Olson has an excused absence. He's in Barrow working on economic development matters and gave us notice of that, which we really appreciate. Our order of business today is SB 60, the extension of the Suicide Prevention Council, and then SB 22, the Medicaid coverage for birthing centers facility charges. And I suspect we'll get to a vote on both of them and vote them up or down to move them on to the next committee of referral today. So first, who's going to make the presentation? Shauna, are you? Please excuse me, I missed dinner in Ottawa last night, breakfast in Seattle this morning, and lunch here because I was working. So this is not rudeness on my part, this is survival.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to address you today, this afternoon. My name is Shannon Straube, I'm with the Office of Senate Bill and Stevens. Senate Bill 60 will extend the termination date of the council from June 30th of 2005 to June 30th of 2009. Like so, a lot of it was recently conducted regarding the extension council, and they've suggested that we please or recommend. And just a little background, in 2001, this legislation was the legislation to enact the council was introduced by Lynn Sanford and Rick Halford. And as a member of the council, Senator Stevens has submitted this legislation for consideration. If you have any questions, I'm available. I'd also like to take this time, if I can, to introduce Catherine Crouch, who's the staff person to the Suicide Prevention Council. And she can answer any questions that you have maybe about that.
Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Kathy Kraft, and I am the Statewide Suicide Prevention Council Coordinator. I work for the Department of Health and Social Services in the Commissioner's Office, and I live in Fairbanks. I wanted to take this opportunity to give you a brief update about the council and a few highlights of the activities that we have ongoing. Our goals that we're working on this year is to broaden the public's awareness of suicide and the risk factors related to suicide, to enhance suicide prevention services and programs by aligning work with our Division of Behavioral Health, to develop healthy communities through collaborative community-based and faith-based approaches, and also to strengthen existing and build new partnerships between public and private entities that will advance suicide prevention efforts throughout our state. As you know, we've, in this last year, gone through our sunset audit, and the council is pleased with the recommendation to have the sunset extended. There were four other recommendations within the audit that we will work with those entities to correct those if the legislation is passed to continue our work. We also have a follow-back study ongoing. There's a contractor, the Alaska Injury Prevention Center, that's doing this work. Some of you know that this study has psychological autopsies. And basically what has happened over the last 2 years is Alaska Injury Prevention Center was able to get their internal review board approval to do a human study subject field study. And from there we worked with the Department of Public Safety and the Medical Examiner's Office to obtain information on individuals who did commit suicide. And after the appropriate morning time, talk with these families to see if they would voluntarily be interviewed and work with AIPC on this study. At this point, the study is to end June 30th of this year of 05. We have asked for an extension so we could have 2 years of full data as opposed to only one. The kinds of data that's being collected in this study is suicide rates by age group, the primary methods of suicide, males versus females, documentation of substance use in the individual's history, and also whether substance use was done while the suicide occurred. ethnicity, urban versus rural, and then we will be able to take that aggregate data and give information with regard to the different regions within the state. We also have information on the suicide attempts throughout the state. We have before you a copy of the statewide suicide prevention plan. That was part of the original law that was passed in 02 that the council developed, drafted, and then disseminated this plan. This was finished in September of 04. We had an event in Anchorage downtown where the plan was released, and now we are working on plans to train communities on how to use the plan and what activities to do when suicide becomes an issue in their community. We also have started a media and public awareness campaign, Suicide Hurts, It Doesn't Have to Happen. We have three posters that are all going to the printers with that message. We also have TV and radio scripts drafted, but don't have the funding for production or airing at this point that would also forward that message. We are working on continuing our clergy and clinician initiative, and basically that's bringing the treatment profession together with clergy and community so they can begin to work together on supporting communities when suicide occurs and to also keep them concerned. And finally, our annual report to the legislature for 05 is due March 1st, and that will be forthcoming in just a couple weeks. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Other questions? Who would be, the people that are present here in the room, best able to speak to us about the graphs and kind of the trends and stuff that's here?
Probably who's in the room myself.
All right. I have some questions I'd like to ask.
Okay. So. And if I can't answer, I'll get the answer for
you. Well, okay. But I'd like to hear from the person you just mentioned.
Oh, no, myself.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misheard. I'm sorry.
Yes, myself.
All right.
If Ron Perkins was here from the Alaska Injury Prevention Center, he would be
the best. All right. So I've got three or four questions. What point in the life of the organization and its work should we be able to start expecting some reductions in the suicide rate?
I can't answer that question. It just depends on other things that are going on in the state, economics, services available. You do know for 04 the rate has actually increased as well.
Yeah,
I would hope that the study, the follow-back study that the Alaska Injury Prevention Center is conducting, once that's complete and they have collected all the aggregate data and done the analysis, that they will have specific recommendations to what can be done.
Yeah, so this was, that created what, 2001?
2002.
So, at some point, we've got to be asking, what difference is it going to make? Mm-hmm. My third question is going to be, what is a goal that we should set for the totality of the state's response here for next year?
We've discussed this internally, and we'd like to see a reduction of 10% over the next year.
Yeah, 10% in the rate or the numbers?
In the numbers.
Now, maybe off in another venue, you could explain to me why that's better than the rate, reduction in the rate. Mm-hmm. Because if the population expands, mm-hmm. All right. What state... departments do you see as being partners in our widespread effort to reduce the suicide rate?
Without a doubt, the Department of Health and Social Services, and within that, the Division of Behavioral Health and Public Health, and also the Trust Authority, the Mental Health Board, the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse, the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Ed, and also the Alaska Commission on Aging, and then the new faith-based and community initiative board.
Okay, so you don't see the Department of Education, the school system, or the police having a place in this?
No, I do. We have an MOA with the Department of Public Safety right now for the follow-back study, and we are involved in that as well.
Are there other questions? Well, all right. I think it sounds like you guys are doing lots of activities and got lots of people to the table to work at stuff. But at some point, if it isn't making a difference, you know, sounds like a whole lot of really nice people getting together to talk to one another, and we still got problems. So I, for one, at least, am going to be interested in, you know, what's been done that finally is reaching these desperate people out there for whom there's no hope, and what, you know, what's been done for them right out there where, I don't mean to crass, but we're using the consumers of the suicide option are. How can we evaluate how effective this looks like pretty big coordinating effort is in making a difference out there? Is it still disproportionately rural native males?
Yes. And disproportionately people in their 20s as well, overall. And I would hope once, you know, that our suicide prevention plan was just released in September. We haven't done any structured training in communities with that plan yet. But once we're able to get out in communities and train on that, that will help. And also once our media campaign actually is started.
All right. So, and the report, you said it'll be out a couple, 3 months?
No, the report was released. The report you have in front of you was released in September.
Yes.
But we need to go out in communities and train on how to use the plan.
All right.
And then the media campaign, the beginning of that, the posters are at the printers now, so that should start as soon as we get those back and are able to disseminate those.
Okay. Does the report say why it's so disproportionately rural native males as opposed to urban native males?
No, but Mr. Chair, the Ron Perkins
All right, can you hear us, sir? Push the mute button.
Is it the Anchorage LIO?
All right, we'll see if we can get him to come back to us. All right. And what does the report say, or that we now know, or the percentage of folks for whom, when they finally did make their suicide attempt, there was mind-altering substances involved?
In case history, that they have a history of substance use, that was 73%, and in actual, after the medical examiner's report, was 62% tested positive. Substance use
at the time. Yep. And then I see in the report to the legislature that some 68% used firearms. Do you have any indication on if the rate would have been reduced if the firearms hadn't been available?
That's certainly one of the goals in our suicide prevention plan is teaching how to lock up guns and not having them available.
That's really not my answer. My question. My question is, how many people wouldn't have done it? Because, you know, firearms are very efficient at their mission, but if one's not available, then I assume that many dedicated people who really want a suicide will do it, find another way, and so on. So I don't want to blame the firearms disproportionately, but indeed, if there's evidence that that not being available in a more less handy, more painful way would have perhaps prevented it. You know, so it's a slightly different question and what you answered?
I don't know, but I can check with Alaska Injury Prevention Center to see if they have that information within the study.
Sure. So for some people, indeed, if the firearm isn't there, but there's a bottle of sleeping pills, you know, or something else, and they just go to plan, automatically switch to plan B, then, you know, well, you know all this no better than me. All right. Any other questions? Senator Wilkins, do you have any questions?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. What's the wish of the committee? Oh, I'm sorry. Do we have other people who want to testify?
I had a question about something else.
Sure.
And it had to do with the audit. Are we need to be the one that would speak to that?
That's your
question.
No, I don't. I'm not talking about the. I'm just talking about how you responded to the suggestions and if everything has been taken to seriously and addressed and all the things that personnel stability and your leadership and the notice of meetings and all. I know you don't have control over all appointments being timely, but on the other things, how does it work out?
We have already been in discussions with the Division of Behavioral Health on being involved in writing and reviewing the request for proposal for peer prevention and early intervention RFP that will be going out. And that was the first recommendation that we work with the community-based suicide prevention grants to ensure that their requests for funding follow the state suicide prevention plan. So that they work incorporate the plan into their grant responses to the Division of Behavioral Health. So we are already working on that together. We also, the council and the Department of Health and Social Services, Fiscal Management Services, will be working on a formal system to ensure that the information about budget and fiscal gets to the council in a monthly and quarterly manner as well. We couldn't find public notices for 2 out of 12 meetings, and so that's why that was there.
Further? Senator Green?
No, I just, I didn't mean to cut Pat Davidson off because she may have something she wants to say.
There was two questions that budget and audit raised that were intriguing to me. Apparently, the council spent money on furniture that was maybe not wise and it was unrelated to the mission, some $30,000+. And then I see at the end that $94,900 went off. Money was transferred to the terminal leave and insurance catastrophe working reserve account. Can somebody explain to me what that was all about? Pat, should you?
For the record, my name is Pat Davidson, representing the Division of Legislative Audit. During the course of our sunset review on the council, we analyzed not only their operational activities, but their financial activities. And what we found is that the Department of Health and Social Services actually used about $30,000 within the council's funds to buy furniture for a new organization providing IT, information technology services to the department as a whole. We did not see where there was a direct benefit to the council to the extent of the money that they put in for this. We believe that there is provision in statute when you have joint costs that everybody pitches in, but they either pitch in according to specific costs or based on an allocation methodology. Neither of those were used. So we have some concerns about that. However, it's more than just the council involved in that process. And so during our ongoing statewide financial audit, we're going to address the issue in its totality. Then the other thing
Excuse me, just on that one before you move on. So did the council in this case have any control over what was an administrative decision with the use of, quote, their money that was appropriated for something very specific?
Mr. Chairman, the council was not involved with that financial transaction that was done by the department.
All right. And am I right in assuming that may happen in other organizations within the state that funds appropriated for a very specific, in this case, very important purpose, were used for another purpose of with some relationship?
Mr. Chairman, when you look at the Budget Act, the appropriation is actually for, I think it's termed boards and commissions. So that is the legal appropriation. That is what encompasses the purposes. So actually, there is the ability budgetarily in accordance with statute to move within that appropriation. However, that's not what they did. They moved outside that one. One of the things that we thought was a contributing factor to this was there wasn't a very good flow of financial information between the department who was responsible for administering the funds and paying the bills and doing the administrative functions and the council. And that's one of the other recommendations that we have in there, is that there be a more formal mechanism. We felt that the council, to some degree, was impaired by its lack of understanding financially where it was, which is why at the end of the fiscal year, almost $95,000 lapsed. The transfers into the terminal leave and insurance catastrophe reserve fund, those are existing statutory provisions that allow for otherwise lapsing funds to refill those reserve accounts, so there don't have to be direct appropriations for those. So from the council's perspective, without a handle on its finances, it didn't know how many actions it could take or how many meetings or they wanted to make posters or whatever they wanted to do. Without a real clear understanding of where they were financially, it's hard to move forward with their business.
So I'll be looking forward to your recommendations in this whole area, and my guess is that we, between us, we really ought to consider what kinds of appropriations ought not to lapse, you know, when they're towards a very specific mission or not, you know, and particularly in a new organization that's just spinning up, you know, and so on. I'll bet you some other jurisdictions around the country might have looked at this before. All right, Senator Elton.
Thanks, and a follow-up to your question, Mr. Chair. Pat, I've not served on LBNA, but are there mechanisms available that would allow for reimbursement back to the council or funds that were spent otherwise being remitted back so that they can be spent on the purposes for which they were appropriated?
Through the Chair, Senator Elton, an appropriation is an opportunity to spend money. That's what an appropriation does. The council is funded with general funds. And so basically, for a set time period, because they are on an operating budget, they are given an opportunity to spend money up to a certain dollar limit. If they don't spend it, it goes away, and then next year's operating budgets will take care of, or should take care of, the expenses related to that fiscal year. So what has really lapsed is the opportunity to spend that money. And with regard to giving them another shot at the money, that would be a matter of whether the legislature wants to increase their current year appropriations. And that would be the budget process.
So if I could just restate, Mr. Chair, what I've heard, there is no mechanism that can redress bad behavior, for example, money being spent on office furniture for another unit. There is no mechanism to redress that.
Chairman, Senator Elton, since we haven't finished our work looking at that whole IT integration thing, I don't know where it's going to end up. One of the possible recommendations from our office would be that the commission, or that the department, has to go in for a supplemental or repeal reappropriation so that to legally fix what they did. With regard to the money lapsing, there is no, in terms of recommendations, other than recommending in future years that the department take on more than 50% of the responsibility for communicating with the council. We looked at them as being more sophisticated users, more in touch with where the money is, and therefore more responsible for that communication flow.
It just an observation. It just seems that Kathy ought to be given the opportunity to go pick out whatever furniture she wants to have from IT.
Take it home. You want to use my truck?
Let me ask you a question.
Sure. Senator Green.
In future years, though, could debt and other similar things be more clearly defined and be in the allocation instead of in the appropriation line?
Through the chair, Senator Green. By statute, agencies are allowed to move money within an appropriation.
I mean, could it be its own appropriation?
Certainly. That's up to the finance committee.
Say that again? It could be with what?
Its own appropriation.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Budget.
Yeah, earmarked or something.
We got the man here.
No, we got all the power.
I'm the man. I'm the man on that one.
All right, will personally ask the board to come back and inform me, us, on what is a reasonable performance target for next year and the out years. And this administration has put a great deal of effort into performance-based budgeting and reasonable, objective ways of monitoring the utility and usefulness of efforts. And ones like this where the studying of the problem might be easy to kind of figure out who should be involved in that. Making it happen in the field where you've got lots of local people, and I hope tribal organizations and native corporations and some really excellent nonprofits that are working out there, you know, they've got some responsibility, and some of them are recipients of funds that flow through the state's coffers. So I'm interested in what is a reasonable reduction. Our suicide rates are 2 or 3 times the national average. For some segments of our population, they're 5 or 6 times the national average. And Senator Halford, I know several others, took a great deal of interest in this, and we need to see that it makes a difference. All of these very bright and capable and caring people's efforts is going to make a difference out there. And I think you well hinted at, you don't have control over all the variables, you know, and so other things that are going on in the culture may be exacerbating the problem at the very time when your efforts are making a difference. It will be hard to measure those. But I'll look to you for some input, but I think we owe it to ourselves to have something objective out there. Thank you.
Yeah. There might be, I notice on the, in your publication, you know, for each unit here, there's a markers for success. And I know you don't have anything else to do, but there might be an opportunity for you to include the mission and how you're going to measure it, to plan for it in your next, or if you do this annually or whatever, or in one of your bulletins like this, and let that become part of your general publication. Because I think throughout, there's a lot of talk about the missions and measures, and it's easy to get over, you know, forget it and move on past it and all, but then when you come back to a committee like this to be reaffirmed, it is important, I think, that, like Senator Dice has said, that there be some indicator that says, yeah, this is what we were watching, this is what we, and I think you're probably nearly there on some of it because of the way the language in this booklet is. You're heading toward that already, you know.
All right, and one more just general thing. 2 years ago, this new governor's administration was saying that it wants to decrease the number of boards and commissions by about 40%. So far in that 2 years, I have not seen the administration come forward with a single recommendation that any board or commission not be reconstituted and or continued. And I wrote to them a couple, 3 months ago suggesting four, all in the mental health field, and supervising mental health professionals. And but anyway, so if anybody wants to communicate that to the administration, we're still waiting for their recommendations on 40% reduction. What's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Green.
I sent about 60 out of committee with individual recommendations. And I will tell you that we'll be revising the fiscal note in finance, because in the out years we have to show the annual 747, so we'll be revising that in finance.
Any objection? Seeing and hearing none. Yeah, Senate Bill 60 passes with individual recommendations. Thank you all. Thanks for the work you're doing.
Who's that?
I don't know. I wanted to ask, but I was afraid he might get upset and use it. Looks like the wheel of a, or a spoke out of a, the wheel of a gilded
laying pin.
Oh. That's what they used to use on pirates, isn't it?
Sailors found them useful for many things. Repelling boarders and mutinies and bill collectors and tax collectors. Certainly one of them. All right. Richard?
Yes, sir. Talk about something positive, babies. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the record. My name is Richard staff, Senator Betty Davis, the blind sponsor, along with yourselves for Senate Bill 22. In my previous testimony, I spoke about the bill, and what we feel was the fourth portion of it. I reiterate that the Senator feels very strongly that this is a positive step in the overall goal of bringing down and controlling the Medicaid costs as it applies to births in the future. It's somewhat akin to looking at the cost in birthing centers as in the picture, the whole picture of the birthing experience, whereby if indeed you choose to give birth in a birthing center, the cost factors overall with the inclusion of the midwife fees and the birthing center facility fee would always be a lower fee than if indeed you went to a hospital and utilize the doctors and the major technology that occurs there, mainly because the births that occur at birthing centers are generally low-risk pregnancies, so that's going to bring down those costs.
And Richard, if I may, at least the information I have seen so far shows that the, quote, facility charges, which is what we're really talking about here, is not much different for the hospitals than it is for the birthing centers. Am I wrong?
You have some fresh information here that I just compiled in the last 2 weeks. In comparison, utilizing more one day in particular hospitals, 2 days, and so on. And you can see the complexity of the cost going up with whatever types of
services. Can you hold that up again?
And I'll just take the one at the top. This is Geneva Woods birth center fee is $1,500, and right below it is Providence for a one-night stay, uncomplicated labor and delivery, room and baby stay without the doctor's fee is $4,000. So it's substantially less. And there are, should be testimony that, that speaks to why those costs, relatively speaking, to having birth, giving birth, excuse me, in a hospital and giving birth in a birthing center, with the variant, the differences.
Could I interrupt just for a second? Richard, would you go through that number again? Where were you? Are you looking at this?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and once more, your explanation.
Center Brooklyn. If you look at the top, you'll see it says Geneva Woods as a birthing center. Mm-hmm. The first is the midwife services fee, but if you look at the secondary fee, which is what we're dealing with here, uh-huh. which is the facility fee, it's $1,500. And if you go down to the next one, which is Providence, you look at the facility fee, if you will, which is the room, uncomplicated pregnancy, without any bells or whistles. Mm-hmm. Well, that facility fee is $4,000, and you can see the comparisons as you go down.
So does the $4,000 equate to the $4,100, or does it equate to the
$1,500? It equates to the
$1,500. That's
okay.
Not real clear.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you.
The reason I think, Senator, well, if you look under your Providence portion there, where it says $4,000, it says one night stay, okay, delivery room and baby stay. All right, I guess you could conclude that that was just the room rent.
Yes, that's just the evening.
And it only goes up $1,000 for the second night?
Only, yes, it does.
But it would go up a $1,500 for the second night at a birth center?
I tell you
what I think is likely to happen here with this committee's action. I don't think that there is any arguments to be made that the birthing centers, with their kind of the triage they do for uncomplicated births and well-prepared parents, that this is very adequate, if not exemplary, health care. The questions are about the finances. And I think that certainly in the main, that it is cheaper to have a child in birthing centers than in a hospital because the hospital has so much more overhead, but also they treat the patients in different ways and mostly have them stay longer periods and so on and so forth. There's certainly a then the argument that folks at the birthing centers make is that without the birthing center facility charge being Medicaid reimbursement eligible, many poor or indigent people or working poor will have to choose the hospital option in order to get the reimbursement for the facility charge, and therefore the entire cost goes up and so on. There's an interesting question, and I would enjoy some information perhaps in the future here, but do any jurisdictions require in their regulations that the birthing center have a formalized relationship with a hospital as a part of the regulation? Do you know?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not certain what you mean by agreement. I know that if indeed there's any complications, obviously there are agreements in place that the mother is taken straight to a facility handle whatever complications as far as I'm concerned, but I'm not certain
Exactly. Yeah, and maybe I was imprecise, but hospitals are going to take anybody that comes in the emergency room door. But many doctors and facilities have a formalized relationship with the hospital, and that the hospital, you know, and it's a kind of a memorandum of agreement in a sense, and that they will deal with more difficult if emergencies come up in the midst of it and so on. So, all right. Anyways, my guess is it will be the action of this committee to refer this bill on to the Finance Committee and deal with the more complicated issues about the risk of this actually accelerating the Medicaid budget and expenditures for us. So. Or not, but
I understand the concept that you're speaking.
Yeah, all right. So Anything else you want to say?
I believe there's people online that can kind of hopefully clarify some of those issues you're speaking of, hopefully. But thank you.
All right. Is there any more questions for Richard when we get Richard back? I'm going to call on the folks. I think these are all off net. And are there any of the people who are off net that are facing real time constraints here that they need to get back to work or have some other responsibility? If not, I'm going to ask Dr. Butner in Cordova to give us your testimony. And please try to hold it to 2 minutes if you can. Can you hear us, Dr. Butner?
Hi, Dr. Butner. Can you hear me?
Go ahead, sir.
Hello. Sir, can you hear me?
Gotcha. Go ahead, give us your testimony, Dr. Butner.
Sure, sorry, I couldn't hear you. Well, as I said in my letter to your office and some of the other senators' offices, I, having tried to refer some of my patients who are on Denali KidCare up to deliver at, or giving them the option to deliver at some of the birth centers in Anchorage, I was surprised to find that the Denali KidCare wouldn't cover the facility fee, thereby largely precluding those women from choosing to, or being able to choose to have a birth center birth. Though it doesn't seem what's in the purview of your committee, I would be almost 100% certain that your concern about this escalating the state's Medicaid expenditures is something not to worry about. In fact, I would imagine that by allowing women who so choose to have their children at the birth center, the state Medicaid program will save quite substantial sums of money. And that's about all I have said.
Dr. Butner, did you have your child delivered in a birthing center?
Yeah, I mean, that's anecdotal. I'm a family practitioner. I do deliveries. I've worked in Kluwak and in Juneau and in Anchorage and now down here in Cordova. And my wife is an obstetrical nurse. And we're certainly familiar with the whole birth process and to some degree the business of the birth process. They're certainly strong advocates for and against birth centers, for and against hospital deliveries. Given, you know, that I think those are side and different issues. But, you know, we, certainly being well educated on this, chose to have our baby recently at a birth center, and it was a good experience, which is not to say hospital birth can't be a very good experience as well. But what I think is really important is for people to have options, and that includes people of all economic strata and payers and whatnot. And as I say, I've had patients here in Cordova who only have, who are fortunate to have Denali KidCare, and their options are limited because of these facility fees. And then ironically, it seems to me the state, by precluding their options, is actually costing the state and, of course, the federal government more money in the end.
All right. I've just handed a note, Dr. Butner, that says that state Medicaid doesn't pay hospitals full charges. They only pay costs or what the Medicaid says that they, whatever the limits are. Is that true, sir?
I believe that is true. And someone would have to actually crunch the number. You know, I guess you would take a normal delivery of what you tried to do at Providence, including the professional fee and the facility fee and the pediatric fee, et cetera, and contract that for the same patient delivering at the birth center. I still would guess the hospital is going to cost more and potentially quite a bit more.
All right. Thank you. As long as we're in Cordova there, is Jennifer Heller there, please?
Yeah, hi, Senator. This is Jennifer. I just wanted to testify in favor also. I'm Dr. Butner's wife, so I am the obstetrical RN and mother of the child just delivered at the birthing center that he referred to. So, And again, you know, getting into all the number crunching, I don't know how it breaks down. I did make a quick call to Providence, and the price listed for a facility fee for a normal spontaneous vaginal delivery, which is all that happens at a birthing center, was $3,400 as opposed to the, I believe it's $1,500 that was at Geneva Woods. So that's just on the face of it. I'm sure there's more detail to go into with that. But again, one thing that I am interested in is providing choice for people who would like to deliver at birthing centers, which was a really wonderful experience. That's all about all I have to say. Do you have any questions?
Are there any questions for Ms. Heller or Dr. Butner? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll go now and go right down the list here. The first one I have is Holly Steiner, a New Life midwife. Can you hear us, Holly?
Hi, this is Holly.
Please, give us your testimony.
Yes, I am a labor delivery nurse. I've done that for 5 years, and then I've been a certified direct entry midwife for 3 years, and I just started my own practice. And I just wanted to start by clarifying that the birth center fee is a one-time fee. It doesn't multiply the next day. And it's very rare, if not, does it ever happen, that we would have someone that would stay longer than 24 hours. It just doesn't happen. Just so that you know that that fee doesn't get multiplied by two. Basically, I just wanted to testify that I see clients on a regular basis that this issue is the issue that causes them to either to choose us or to not choose us. And we turn away women on a regular basis that want midwives, that want out-of-hospital births, but that cannot afford the birth center fee and do not want to have a home birth if that is another option. And they end up going to the hospital, and I've heard stories over and over again where they come back to us because, you know, they like us and we have a relationship with them, and they tell us, you know, when it was all said and done, they got Pitocin, they got this, and they got that, and they paid $10,000 for their birth. And we midwives are just looking at that like, this is absurd. You know, if they would have been able to deliver at the birth center and if Medicaid would have paid for it, Medicaid is paying for all this stuff, and so they're paying so much more in the long run. And I also wanted to highlight the fact that midwifery care around the world, this model, has been the best kind of care. It's been proven. We have statistics, and our goal as midwives is not to make money. Our goal as midwives is to, you know, most of us are called to this kind of profession, and we want to provide this wonderful care to women, and we want to decrease the infant and maternal mortality and morbidity rate. And I feel like in Alaska we have done a good job of that, because I have the statistics of the births and percentage of births by certified direct entry midwives, and it starts in 97 and it ends in 2002. And I'll just read. I'm in Wasilla, Matanuska Borough. In 97, we delivered 14.9%. In 98, it went to 18.7. In 99, it went to 21.7. Went down to 18, 16. 2002, it was up to 26.6%. Since 2002, we have opened up one new birth center and three new midwifery clinics or businesses in the valley, so I can guess that this 26.6% will have gone up by now, and it is just continuing to rise. In Juneau, it's the same thing. It was 3.5%, then to 7.5%, then to 15%, and then 16.8% in 2002. In Anchorage, it started at 1.2% in 97, and on up to 6.5% in 2002. And Anchorage as well has opened up several. Two new birth centers, as well as new businesses. So we are rising, and we have something very unique in Alaska, that we have a large percentage of women in the state giving birth outside of the hospital with well-trained midwives, and they're having wonderful outcomes. And I just believe that in the long run, definitely this is going to save money for the state.
All right. Thank you. Are there any questions for Holly? And for all the people who are going to testify here, I think we have four or five more. This bill will pass out of committee today, I believe, and it will be another hearing in finance at some point. So you certainly can testify at both, but it's not going to probably make a lot of difference to today's actions. So it's your choice. And next person I have is Barbara Norton. Can you hear us, Barbara?
Hi, this is Barbara Norton. I represent Geneva Woods Birth Center in Anchorage. And I have a couple of, I can address one of your questions. You asked if there was a relationship required between birth centers and hospitals. We actually have a written agreement, a written transfer agreement with Providence Hospital. It is actually a requirement of our national accreditation. So yes, we did. There is a requirement that birthing centers have a relationship with hospitals. And that is part of our national accreditation requirements. And another one I want to address before I give you any testimony is someone was talking about the fact that the state is not really paying the $4,000, that you have a contracted rate that you're going to pay. And that may be true, and it's possible that your contracted rate is something reasonable like $2,000 or $2,500. But one of the things that you're not considering is that when women go into the hospital, just by virtue of being there, there is so much intervention that is automatically done that increases your cost from the base cost that you've negotiated in terms of epidurals or an extra $1,000. There's all women are induced unnecessarily. That's extra money. The cesarean section rate in the hospital, in the national average is 27% for cesarean sections. I'm assuming Providence is similar, at least 25%. And birthing center cesarean section rates are only 3-6% in the state. The lowest is 2%, the highest is 6%. So there's a humongous savings in just in cesarean section rate alone. So it's not just the cost that you've negotiated. There's just so much less intervention that happens outside of the hospital, so much less intervention in a birthing center that saves the state money, too. But really, there's two issues here, and one issue is encouraging healthy women to go to birthing centers because they cost less money. But also, the state really should be in a position of encouraging women to utilize midwifery care because midwifery care really does decrease the risk of cesarean sections, and it which will keep the cost down for the state. So the state of Florida several years ago, the legislation passed a bill saying that they wanted to have 25% of all their births attended by midwives by the year 2005 because they knew that the cost savings would be significant. Well, we're actually almost already at 25% in the state with all of the different types of midwives practicing. So we are saving you money already by having such a high percentage of midwifery attended births. We're just hoping that the legislature will look at the fact that some women who qualify for Denali K-Care and don't have all the money or the insurance companies are being denied the opportunity to have low intervention, high touch, low technology births in birthing centers because they cannot afford the facility fee.
Senator Green.
She didn't say that women who have insurance companies. She wasn't including that in this conversation, was she?
I'm sorry, what's the question?
I heard you say something about insurance companies.
Well, insurance companies pay us the facility fee. And some insurance companies pay us 100% of the facility fee because they want to encourage their people to come to birthing centers. Most of them pay 80%, but there are some that pay 100%.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, because I misunderstood her. But one of the things that has not been made clear is that when Denali Kid Care or any other kind of Medicaid program that we participate in and you have a recognized covered item that is covered by the feds, they're paying the lion's share of the fee, including this facility fee. But since the feds do not recognize this type of payment, this is a 100% state payment. That's where we have to look at what the $1,500 or whatever, even though it's lower, our percentage goes up. I mean, since we're at 100% and could easily exceed for purposes of the state Medicaid budget. I'm just bringing that forward because I think we're overlooking that it's very likely the federal government will not reimburse 1 cent on this change.
And certainly it's a decision for the bill's prime sponsor, but I had considered the option of making this conditional upon the federal waiver, you know, our agreement to do this. And that will be certainly a decision for your boss to make. And also whether or not this should only be available for the birthing centers that have an agreement with a hospital or are part of the National Accreditation Organization has met. Those are all certainly possibilities that could affect the funding stream. Thank you, Barbara.
Sure, thank you.
Jack Nielsen, Jerry Fuller, are you guys on?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we're here.
All right, when are you guys going to finish the regulations?
Which regulations?
For birthing centers.
Once you pass the law that makes them a covered service, we will put together regulations to figure out the reimbursement methodology and all of the other stuff that goes with that. I'd like to point out or make a comment regarding something Senator Green said. We don't know if we can get federal approval of this. 2 years ago, I would have said this would be a slam dunk, we'd have it done in 60 days, but there's been a very significant change at Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services when it comes to getting state plan approval. So we would mightily try to get that approval, but until they actually give us the signed document, I think it's probably wise to assume that it's going to be difficult, time-consuming, and it could conceivably be a general fund-only program.
I think your idea may be very good, making it contingent upon federal approval for the waiver or inclusion.
Jack or Jerry, I understood that the department was supposedly coming forth with regulations just for the birthing centers and that wasn't contingent upon this little piece of legislation is before us. Am I missing something, or are you?
This is Jerry Fuller. You may be making reference to the legislation that passed last year that moved the approval of birthing centers from a registration kind of process to a licensing kind of process. I don't know at this very moment where the department is at in accomplishing that, but that was the legislation last year.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about. So while we get a little bit more testimony from one or both of you, can the other one get on the phone and find out from somebody where that process is at?
Actually, we will attempt to do that.
All right. Then go ahead with the rest of your testimony, gentlemen, please.
Well, we're here to answer your questions. I believe that the last hearing, Jack made testimony about the physician's neutrality in terms of this bill. So if there's questions, we're here to answer those questions.
Is that agreed?
Who's neutrality? The commissioners?
Jack, Jerry, Senator Green is asking, who's neutral?
The department's position on this bill is neutral. We're not opposed or not in support, so we're trying to present, you know, neutral information regarding this.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, any other questions for Jack or Jerry at this point? All right, well, then we'll go to Sharon Evans and Matt Sue. Can you hear us, Sharon?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, please identify yourself and give us your testimony.
Okay, my name is Sharon K. Evans, and I'm a midwife practicing in Wasilla, Alaska at Matsu Midwifery. At our last conference call regarding Senate Bill 22, a gentleman from Health and Social Services testified claiming midwives delivered 100 women with Denali Kid Care coverage in 2004. And after that telephone call, that prompted me to do a little research. And so I researched into five of the birth centers in Alaska, just five of them, and obtained the number of Denali Kid Care births that were done by those five birth centers. And that number ended up being 218, with a total number of 447 out-of-hospital births. Now, this is not a complete number, since only five of the birth centers of Alaska were used for this study. It's been expressed before that each woman giving birth in a birth center, that for each woman giving birth in a birth center, the state would actually realize the savings of a minimum of approximately $2,500 per patient over hospital costs. So for those 218 women with Denali Kid Care served by midwives in 2004, this would calculate to a minimum savings of $545,000. Now, if you calculated the cost of hospital interventions done, such as epidurals, narcotics, etc., that would increase above and beyond that. So it's easy to see that the state would save even more than that. And since we serve low-risk women, we would expect the cost for their care naturally to be greatly reduced compared to hospital births. And I'm just asking you to please support this bill, because not only will the state save money, but the low-risk and needy women can have the same options that self-paying and insurance-reimbursed women have. Thank you.
Any questions for Sharon? Thank you, Sharon, and thanks for the work you do.
Thank you.
Dana Brown? All right, here in town we have Kane? Kane?
I do have written testimony that I'll submit, but I just wanted to answer a few questions that have come up. The other midwives have done a really good job of testifying, so you don't need to hear it all again from me. But one of the questions I would like to address through the chair to Senator Green is the issue of if the federal government does not match 50%, if they don't do that and the state ends up paying 100%, the savings to the state are still realized. If you pay 100% of a facility fee for a birth center, it's going to be a lot less even still than the 50% that you would pay for a facility fee for a hospital. So I would just like to point out that we will continue to work to get the federal government to recognize birth centers as a recognized facility, and I will continue to work diligently on that. But in the meantime, I think that you would still realize the savings. One of the things that you can't really do is compare a birth center facility fee to a hospital facility fee. The hospital facility fee does not include mandatory fetal monitoring, IVs, epidurals, which are 80% of women who go to the hospital with having a baby have an epidural, and then of course the increased C-section rate. And that C-section rate across the board is most of these women going into the hospital are low-risk women. Obviously all of the women coming to the birth center are low-risk women. But once you're in a hospital situation, it's really hard to not have the interventions that occur. And with the women, and you know that I've worked with, they have had a hospital birth, their bill is a minimum of $10,000 just for the hospital. That's not including the physician's fee, which is in itself even more than our fee. So you can look at the room rate, but that doesn't really tell you what the costs are for the hospital bill. And then with the increased C-section rate, when you're looking at Juno at 28% to 30% C-section rate, there's a huge difference there. The other issue I'd like to address is the issue you're asking about regulations for birth centers, and I did work on that bill last year, and I have been in conversation with Shelby Larson. And Shelby Larson is the person in the state who's working on the regulations for the birthing centers. We have tried to create one kind of birthing center. We had registered birth centers and licensed birth centers, and with the bill last year, we created one type of birthing center, the licensed birth center. The regulations for licensed birth centers have not been updated since 1984. And so one of the conditions that we had with the bill that we passed last year was that the regulations would be brought up to date, basically, so to include all of us in them. And in talking with Shelby Larson, my understanding is that there's a huge regulation project going on in health and social services for all facilities, and that this would be part of that process. But they couldn't just address the regulations for the first one, they couldn't address all the facilities' regulations, and so they are working on it, but it seems to me that it's going to be the timing process.
Questions? That sounds like a bureaucratic answer that says your project way back in the queue. And, all right, is there any questions for, yeah?
Just an observation, Mr. Chairman. I mean, that's the same response we got when we asked about regulations on transportation of dead bodies, that they're working on a huge regulation project, and it would be some time before they would ever get to those regulations. So it's not an uncommon response from the department.
All right. And I don't want my comments to be taken as disrespectful. Jack or Jerry, have you guys got any information for us? Thank you, Kay. Thanks for the work you do. All right. Any further questions in the committee? Anyone else who want to testify that hasn't had an opportunity?
Yeah, this is Jack Jacob. I wanted to testify.
I don't have you on my list, but go ahead, Jack.
My name is Dr. Jack Jacob. I'm the I'm a newborn specialist in Anchorage, and I've been in Alaska since 1980. In the work that I do, I am, we are the repository of problems and complications that occur in deliveries. And so I wanted to say a couple of things. One is the questions, I want to make sure that people are asking the right kind of questions. The statistics that I've heard about costs, I think, in all due respect, are incomplete costs. I don't think it's a complete picture to compare birthing hospital costs with hospital costs. I think that there are complications that occur from birthing center births and out-of-hospital births that need to be put into the equation. I do know that we, indeed, in the work that we do, are repositories for that. And those costs sometimes, even for an individual baby, can be rather major. So one of the key points that I want to make is that all the cost testimony that I have heard so far and the discussion I have heard so far is, I think, a very incomplete picture of cost. The other thing that I want to say is that I think that in my practice in Alaska, that there is nothing unsafe about birthing center births. What is unsafe is when the infrastructure and the organization, so in the certain countries in Europe where birthing center births occur very, very safely, but those countries have a strong infrastructure to make those things happen. I will also say that in my practice, my impression is that although people have testified that that infrastructure exists and relationships with hospitals exist in terms of complications, that the birthing centers do deliver mothers that would be considered at high risk. And I have seen those patients. I also want to say that like the midwives that have testified, I indeed have been called to my profession. And I don't think this is an issue of calling. I think that what the committee and other people ought to be thinking about is actual objective outcomes, actual objective data. I think questions about what are the death rates for newborns compared to hospital births, what are the death rates, what are the complication rates, those are the kinds of key critical questions that ought to be asked in terms of having Medicaid pay for these, and in order to develop the right kind of relationships, regulations, and infrastructure for making these things occur safely, and I've not really heard that.
Thank you. I appreciate your comments, Doc. And I'm not meaning to put words in your mouth here, but you're not inferring that the death rates here for the birthing centers, infant death rates, have been higher than they would have been if the mothers had gone to a hospital?
I think that one of the confusing pieces of information that comes out is you have to ask yourself, in an ideal world, if patients are screened appropriately and are absolutely low risk, what should the death rate be? And the answer is should be zero. And so if you do have deaths that are occurring, and I do know they have been, but I'm not privy to all the stats, I think the state of Alaska should have this information, that these are the critical questions that should be asked.
All right, and I'm struggling here, but do you know of cases where the prospects for the mother and child were worse because they went to the birthing center first, and with the complications that came on, that the time it took to get to the hospital with more facilities exacerbated the situation?
Yeah, that answer is correct, and that's because appropriate screening and relationships and infrastructure did not exist.
All right. I would hope that when the regulation process proceeds here, that those regulations are very precise about the screening, and that people with experience like yourself get a chance to look at those and comment. Because we really do want the screening to be really well done. Would you recommend that the birthing centers have a formal relationship with a hospital, so when their complications do come up, there's an expedited process for admission and so on?
I think the issue is complex, but I think that if there are, you know, there are a few highly urban countries in Europe that have a good model for making this happen successfully. I think Alaska is kind of unique, but I think if there are good relationships, it is possible to have, under certain circumstances, infrastructure, but in my 24 years experience over here, I've not seen it.
All right, and then are you also inferring then, sir, that we ought to be careful about having birthing centers that are not near a major hospital facility?
I think if you decide to have a birthing center away from a hospital facility, you need to have a discussion about what you're going to do if something goes wrong.
All right. Thank you, sir. Are there any questions for him? All right. Thank you. Any further questions or testimony? All right. Go off the record. I think we've got a clear decision.
Mr. Chairman, move to report Senate Bill 22 from Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
To objection?
For discussion. I had a call from a friend from Fairbanks yesterday afternoon who left a voicemail, said she was concerned that I was against the bill. I'm not against this bill at all. I have great concern over the cost of the bill and the prospective cost of the bill, and I'm glad that Dr. Jacobson came on at the end to perhaps pull us back into reality. When this does go to finance, as I said yesterday, I think we'll just stick it off to the side and just see if we can fit it in. But I was here in 1999 when we signed on to Denali Kid Care. The Denali Kid Care today far exceeds, outstrips far beyond what we were told it would be when we put it in place. So in the climate that we have today of Medicaid being such a burden on our general fund budget, in light of what's happened in the last 7 years with Medicaid across at least seven different, I'll call them verticals, but disciplines, with extraordinary costs that have increased at the rate of anywhere between 80 and 130% a year, I'm very concerned about adding something on. I'm very concerned about adding something on a ring and a prayer, hoping that it isn't going to increase our Medicaid cost. This is a wonderful bill. It just may be the wrong bill, or the right bill at the wrong time. And so, when it does, Richard, get up to finance, we need to be. I'll need to be, and others, I think, will be a little more comfortable on real costs. And then we'll have to make an individual decision of each of us as to whether we want to roll the dice and make sure that that the bill comes in the future under the expectations at which we pass the bill out. So with that, I remove my objection.
And I certainly think that each and every point that the senator, who happens to be co-chair of finance, has made is an important point. And I suspect that as people do the work, and I know that there's a network of people out there that have been doing work on this bill and have provided a substantial amount of information already to the committee, it seems to me that the finance committee quite legitimately is going to look at costs. Given the explosion in healthcare costs, given additional fees that are often charged at different centers, given the issue of protecting profit centers within healthcare providing facilities, all of those questions I think are very important, and I tend to believe that there is an answer, there is a good answer, and I tend to believe, this is going to sound like I might be in the wrong political party, but I tend to believe that as you increase options for families, you introduce a competitive atmosphere in the provision of these kind of services. And my guess is that a close review of final numbers may suggest that this is a cost-effective way of giving families choice. So, I mean, that's my guess. I think that the sponsor has probably heard what the charge is for the next committee, and I look forward to hearing the review.
So I heard no objections to passing this bill. All right. SB 22 is passed out of committee with individual recommendations. We are adjourned. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you.